It's 8:13 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, KPCW continues its series of candidate interviews as early voting wraps up this week. In the studio with me this morning is Park City Council candidate Tim Henney. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Leslie.
So we've heard a lot during this campaign about keeping Park City, Park City. What does that mean to you?
Well, I think it all focuses around our authentic community and what I heard Rob Carr speak to 2 weeks ago at the Kimball Arts Center when they were doing, the Vail was doing their granting process, was for 20 minutes he stood up there and talked about how a unique, authentic community is critical to sustaining their business model. And I like the link that he made between the two. And I think that what makes Park City different and unique and authentic is the people who live here year-round, the primary residents. And I think that there's, you know, kind of a threat that faces us. We are losing our middle income, and we will over time because we are not replacing the middle income housing stock. And I think that's something that's just come to the radar, and partially because I keep bringing it up, but I think it's a really big issue.
Mm-hmm. So what's the middle income housing?
Well, I think it's what a lot of us bought 10 and 15 years ago in Old Park Meadows, Prospector, Thanes, some of those neighborhoods, housing stock that would have sold for between $300,000 or $400,000 and $500,000 and $600,000, kind of that bracket. It does not exist anymore. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, I'm not talking about controlling the prices of homes at all. Those homes have simply doubled and in some cases tripled. So what we haven't done is we haven't found a way to incentivize the creation of new housing stock to replace that housing stock that has appreciated in price. And as time goes on, if you are in one of those homes that you bought 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, you're feeling pretty good about things, but you project out 20 years and we will not have a middle class, and that will fundamentally change the fabric of this community. And we will not, I don't believe that we can then say we have an authentic community.
Yeah. So, I mean, if elected, how are you going to do that? Change the fabric of the community? I mean, that's...
Well, I'm trying not to change the fabric of the community. I think that, you know, that's the key, is to keep what we have. And if we lose our middle class, we are at risk of changing the fabric
of the
community.
But you're going to have to change because we're headed down that way, aren't we?
Well, it's how we manage heading down that way. It's everything that comes at us. And those are, every challenge that we face is an opportunity to continue to refine and hone who we are as that authentic community. And when it comes to middle income housing stock, I would put the same sort of requirements on it for any new development that we currently have for workforce housing. I would kind of start to shift the focus to the middle income from the workforce. I think they have to be the two top priorities. I would require that there's a certain quota of each that comes along with any development. So that means Bonanza, that means Treasure Mountain, that means the base of the resorts. Anything that we do from here on out has to address those issues.
Yeah. When you're talking about the houses, though, in that $300,000, $500,000 range, those are single-family homes with an attached garage. I mean,
not necessarily.
That's not what it's going to look like.
Not in Bonanza, they're not. No, they're stacked. They're
that's
loft.
What I'm saying, though. Yeah. Is that what it's going to look like?
Yeah, that's what it's going to look like.
And is that what?
Oh, so you? Yeah.
I'm just saying. You know what? This has been the picture up until now.
Right.
With that gone, now people are going to be forced to live in a condominium or a townhouse.
Parking. Quite honestly, if I were given that choice, I'd take it. I think that's a great option. So I think there's a lot of people, and I'm just speaking from, you know, my personal preference. But if I had the option to buy a loft in a walkable community like Bonanza Park, that would be very attractive to me. It may not be attractive to everybody, but, you know, we've got plenty of single-family homes with detached and attached garages. So, yeah, the model's going to be different in the future.
So in the meantime, then, the rest of the neighborhoods, like Old Town, you know, I mean, as you're opponent Mary Winsor was saying, you know, eventually the lights are going to be shut off because it's so expensive to live here that we're not going to.
The middle class has been forced out of Old Town. Yeah, that has already happened. And that's what we're going to see community-wide if we don't address it.
All right, so you say you have vision. What is that vision then for the next 10 years?
My vision is to, as I said, continue to approach each challenge not as a problem but as an opportunity to define who we want to be and project out 10, 20 years and make decisions based upon that. So I think that when we're talking about building, we can build in a way that conserves water, and we can build in a way that possibly not only minimizes but even reduces congestion. I think we want to work towards a community that does not require an automobile, so we want alternative alternative modes of transportation. We want to link the base of the resorts to Old Town and Old Town to the other commercial nodes.
Are you saying that for our guests that come
Everybody.
In?
And primarily, I mean, again, the lens that I like to look through is community first. So if it works for the community, it's going to attract those tourists. That's the model. Even if we don't really speak to that, that's what we've done. We have put the community first. We put a skateboard park in for the kids of the community, and it turns out to draw the tourists because the tourists come here, they bring their kids are riding at the skateboard park, they're riding with locals. It's a totally different feel and sensation, and they want to come back because of that. And that's because we do things for the community first.
Yeah, but I guess we just have a huge commuter population. I mean, to think that we're going to get our people out of the cars, that seems a little utopian, no?
It does. And let's start thinking in utopian terms. That's what we need to do if we're going to be looking out 20 years. I'd love to see light rail come up from the valley and go to Kimball's Junction, Quinn's Junction, and then tie into our existing public transportation system. Yeah, I think that would be a great goal to shoot for. And if we're going to be close to achieving that 20 years from now, we have to start talking about it today. And it's already being talked about. So I think we can just continue to energize that. And that's the direction that I would head in.
Yeah. As an Old Town resident, how do you feel about the city council's efforts a few years ago to try and limit the mass and scale of new building here? It didn't go anywhere there, but certainly is it something you think should be brought back?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I think that anything that goes in needs to fit into the existing community. It can't outsize what's around it. And, I mean, we have allowed that to happen. So the whole mass and scale of everything in Old Town has changed. The old miners' cabins are now the front facades, and then you have the big additions that go up. So we've already created a bigger mass and scale for almost everything here. I don't know that it's going to be a huge issue. It seems like that's something that maybe, you know, we attempted to deal with, and whether it was successful or not, but that's kind of the last 10 years. I'm not sure that's going to really come into play in the next 10 years.
It was a huge issue to try and, to try and limit that, and you're saying that that's something you would support.
Yeah, I'm in support of that.
Yeah. Is that fair, though? What about the people who haven't developed their property, redeveloped their property?
Codes and zones, are they fair? I mean, yeah, they're fair. They take the community's considerations. You know, they prioritize the community's considerations. Every zone ordinance and law that we have does that. So, yeah.
Yeah. You've also said that you'd like to see the streetlights in Old Town removed. So how are the few kids living in Old Town going to know when it's time to come home for dinner?
I guess they could get a call on their cell phone and use it as a little lantern or something. Yeah, I don't know about completely removing, but the lights that we have right now are they're not particularly effective and they're obtrusive. So, you know, we either need to shade them or put some other system up or spread them differently, or shading them so that they don't shine into people's windows at night would be a great thing. They don't have shades on them. They're old technology and they're kind of garbage. They look terrible and they don't really work all that well.
Yeah. You are also a proponent of trails. The council recently started talking about what to do with the Stone Ridge property there on the north end of Round Valley that was purchased last year's open space. We're already talking about trailheads and new trails, which some say will respect wildlife. Do you buy into that?
Yeah, I think trailheads are a good thing. Yeah. Instead of allowing people to scatter all over the place, they force you to park in one location. They keep everything controlled. People have access to the trails. You don't end up wandering around. That's good for wildlife.
Yeah, there's also been some talk, though, about, you know what, just keeping open space for wildlife.
Totally wild.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I don't know that you can say that Stone Ridge fits that. It's surrounded by neighborhoods and dogs and people hiking. I'm not sure that that's, the wildest of wild lands.
So we should go ahead and build trails on that property then.
I'm in favor of trail extensions where they make sense and tying into the existing system. I think there's already de facto trails there. So formalizing those trails, yeah, I would be in favor of that. And putting in trailheads, yep.
Yeah. What about leash laws? Have we done a good job of enforcing those?
And that's
I know it's something
one.
That the county Man. Takes. The county, you know, that's the county's role is to enforce leash laws.
I know, and I hearken back to the days where dogs wandered Main Street in Old Town at at whim, you know, and it was a great thing to see. And every now and then you'll see a dog tied up outside the no-name or outside the post office again, even today, but they're always on leash. And that's just, I don't really know what to say about that. We've kind of lost something of our character in that respect. And I guess that's a consequence of the evolution of this town and the choices that we made 20 years ago to become a world-class destination resort / community. That's a little bit of the community that we gave up in order to achieve those other goals, and I have mixed feelings about that. I love dogs wandering town, but there are laws, and they have to be enforced.
What about wood-burning stoves? You know, you kind of have taken this environmental bent. You're, you know, kind of on the green side of things. Should we look at banning wood-burning stoves and wood-burning fireplaces to protect the air quality?
I don't have enough knowledge. My personal bent is that's probably where we're headed. I think we're probably going to, over time, have so many wood-burning stoves, putting so much, wooden smoke and particle into the atmosphere that, you know, it's probably going to become untenable. So it's probably something that, you know, we're headed in that direction. I don't have data and information to make an informed, you know, even call on it at this point.
You've often said that water should no longer be used as a plentiful commodity, but rather as a precious resource. So what does that look like in terms of water policy for Park City Municipal?
Water policy from Park City Municipal. Okay, well, I think right now we try to enforce positive water use and efficient water use by saying, here's a list of plants that we allow. These are native plants. These are, you know, drought tolerant plants, but in fact, they're not really. They're native plants, but a lot of them are water hogs. And so it's really lip service that we pay at this point to blending our landscape plan to anything that gets developed and then trying to enforce it. We need to put some teeth into it. You have people in the community that are already doing it. Those are your progressive leaders that are shifting the collective consciousness. It can be done, and it's not necessarily xeriscaping. It's actually tying in efficient irrigation systems and how you manage those irrigation systems. That's probably the a key and critical component that is not actually being used effectively at this point. All the irrigation systems are old technology, and basically what happens 9 out of 10 times is somebody shows up in the spring, turns it on, sets it for 20 minutes to station every other day, and comes back in October and blows the system out. And it doesn't matter if it rains, it doesn't matter what the soil moisture content is, it doesn't matter. It just waters. That is wasting a lot of water in this town. So we need to put some teeth into the regulations. We need to look at it. We need to have certifications. We need to have a way of seeing if irrigation systems are in compliance with what our goals and objectives. And right now, we don't do that.
Well, what we have done, though, is just made water more expensive the more you use. So you're just saying people aren't, they're not going to be bothered by that.
I think people are starting to notice. Yeah, I think people are bothered, and I think there's more bother on the way.
I'm
in favor of higher prices.
Yeah,
I'm in favor of getting people's attention through higher prices, and I think we're beginning to get the attention of people. And again, it's, you know, where do you fit in this community? Is a $200 a month water bill going to get your attention, or does it need to be $800 a month, you know, and how much are you using? And should there be an absolute cap? I'm in favor of an absolute cap. I don't know why people need to use 15,000 gallons to water their lawns during the summer. That's not viewing it as a community resource. That's viewing it as an individual's commodity that they can buy. I don't like that view. I like the view that this is a precious community resource, and we need to start viewing it that way, using it that way, and pricing it that way.
Yeah. But when we have already, in the last few years, quadrupled our base monthly water bill from $15 to now $67 a month, I mean, that's up to the 5,000 gallons of water that, you know, some people can live on month to month. You know, when we go back to the middle class, with those kind of increases happening in 5 years, I mean, why bother with the middle class? Because people can't afford, one, to pay water bill, nor, you know, taxes are going to, you know, go up, things like that.
I agree with you. I mean, it's tough to live in this town and see what's happened to property taxes and user fee taxes. You know, the one you're using, water, I don't find that much of a problem, Leslie. I mean, quite honestly, the percentage increase is huge, but the absolute number is pretty minimal. And so, you know, going from 15 to 67 for that $5,000 initial allotment, that's not so much of a problem. Above the 5,000, I'd hammer people. I mean, I would raise those prices so that they really felt it.
You seem to be aligning yourself with mayoral candidate Andy Bierman. Is that in case if Andy is elected that you may have a chance of being chosen to succeed him on, you know, with his open vacant council seat?
No, absolutely not. And it's interesting that you would say that. I don't have the perception that I've aligned myself with anybody. In fact, for me to be elected, I can't be aligned. I have to be able to draw from lots of different cores and bases of support. And I think so far, you know, what I've heard is people who support Andy support me, people who support Jack support me, people who support other council members support me. So I don't think there's been any alignment at all. And quite honestly, the appointment could be reaching into a hat and pulling a name out. It really has nothing to do with the election. Hopefully, they would take the city council when appointing would take that into consideration as a factor, but it doesn't go to the person who got the next highest number of votes. And who knows what's going to happen with Andy and Jack? It's a tight race, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. All right. Finally, why should people vote for Tim Henney?
Well, it's my engagement with the community. I've been very active for 21 years that I've lived here. It's the next step as far as public service, and I have skills and the ability to frame things in a way that I think will benefit the community. I'm diligent. I bring intense focus to a process. I'm a big believer in the process, and I'll work hard for the community.
All right, Tim, thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's Park City City Council candidate Tim Henney. KPCW News Time now, 8:29.